sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Big recovery for markets. About 25 European banks fail the stress tests. Ebola fears continue, and our guest today, Fausto Puglisi from Cyber Trading University, can talk to us all about trading and ideas for you. All this and much more on episode number 386 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, how are you? It is the end and final week of October 2014. We're seeing a big recovery. We're seeing an incredible V-shape again for markets, where we had this big drop about a week and a half ago. Looked like the bottom was about to fall out, with the Dow Jones down close to 460 points at one point a couple of weeks back during the day. And the recovery set in as soon as we started to see some of the central bankers talking about, you know, interest rates may be on hold for a lot longer than anticipated. And who knows, maybe even the fact that we are going to slow down on bond purchase may not actually happen. And we did see that ever since the conversation from Bullard, one of the central bankers from the Fed, talked about this, at that exact moment, the recovery, which has been about 7.5% or so since the bottom, that was the point when we saw the turn, and about 6% recovery in the S&P 500 since that point. Now, of course, some of the earnings that we've seen have also helped out. We've seen earnings from, probably close to about 60% of the S&P 500, and the beat ratio is about 75% on earnings, about 65% or so on revenues. And that has been very good to help the spirit and soothe a lot of the concerns by investors. You know, the drop that we saw, when we look back on it, you question, what was that all about? There was a lot of things happening and converging all at the same time. The dollar was moving up pretty fast, as we know. We saw that oil had been dropping close to the 81, towards the 80 range, and looked like it was going to continue to slide. And to top that all off, we had the unknown situation with how fast and how far is this Ebola situation going to spread. And that all converged and caused a major rift with markets and market participants. And add to that the fact that we saw that there was a continuation of concern over Europe. That was at a time when the ECB and Mario Draghi had come out and said, you know, we pretty much have one tool left in our toolbox. All we have left really is some kind of either quantitative easing or asset-backed purchases. Probably one of the worst things that a central banker could say is that we're pretty much out of ammunition. And that's really what he said at that point 2 weeks ago. Now, fast forward to where we are now. During the week, we saw that there was rumors that about 25 out of the 140 or so banks that were tested for stress tests in the European area, in the European region, were going to fail. Now, once those numbers came out in terms of some undisclosed party that put this out, immediately we saw that Draghi came out and said, you know, that's not true. The results are not out yet. Don't take that information as gospel. And just to let you know, we have several different tools and unconventional methods that we can utilize in order to make sure that the economies will go back to growth, that deflation is under control, and that there is stability within the region. What is so ironic about this is we're talking about a major turn from what he said 2 weeks ago, whereas he had pretty much no tools left, to all of a sudden there's just an unimaginable infinite number of tools that are available that he can use. Now, why is that? Let's really talk what's going on. The job of the central banker is to promote growth in the economy any way possible, whether it's through methodologies that they use, like lowering interest rates, these days buying bonds, providing liquidity, or the communication method, which is trying to, as they say, be transparent and discuss what's going on, or, as I say, by providing all sorts of conversation disguised in the form of conversation rhetoric to prop up markets, to soothe market participants, to make all feel that, hey, things are just okay and fine. Don't worry about it. We got your back. We got your back. And that's what happened here. I do not believe Mario Draghi as far as I can throw him. I've told you this 100 times, and I'm telling you again. This guy is a menace. He's a nuisance. He is good for markets in one regard, but at the same time, he is not a believable character. He's not someone that you can trust because he says what he has to say, whether or not he can actually provide the actual results. So he's going to talk this talk. He's going to, you know, make a story up and change on a dime if it needs be. So who knows where the truth is in all of this? Is it the fact that he only has a couple of tools left, or is it that he has just an unlimited amount of opportunity to try to revive the economies? Now, just to kind of give you a little bit more on this, the news did come out on Sunday that 25 banks did fail. Now, again, to put that into perspective, we have to realize that when we look at the situation with the stress tests of the European banks previously, there was really no banks that failed. In fact, one of the funny things is that we saw that there was really no banks that even got close to hitting any kind of problems with stress tests. And that's why everybody was saying that, you know what, these stress tests are baloney, absolutely worthless. They are just there to try to provide whatever mechanism of comfort that they are to investors, even though there's really no substance behind them. And the fact of the matter is we saw that as they put these out, and we saw problems with the Portugal banks, and we saw the more issues with Greece and all the different countries that were having problems, the fact was that it became very clear that the stress tests that were done previously were done in a way to calculate whatever was needed to calculate in order to make sure that everybody passed. Now, I think what happened here is that the realization was that, you know what, nobody's believing these stress tests, so we got to fail some. We got to make sure that we have a margin of believability in order to ensure that there is a underlying respect for these stress tests, and therefore we're going to make them tougher. We're going to make sure that some fail, but at the same time, behind the scenes, come up with a conversation and news items that ensures everybody that if we do have failures, we have plenty of tools in order to flush liquidity into these banks. That's what's happened right now. So the idea of what they did was to create, at least in their minds, some kind of believability, but also a plan to back it up so that nobody thinks that things are really going to fail, even though there are 25 banks that are on the cusp of requiring additional capital infusions. So kind of that's what's going on with Europe. I still think that Europe is a disaster area, and any kind of disruption to the economy, whether it's going to be the continuation of sanctions against Russia, Ebola, or any kind of slowdown in Germany, is going to cause a major problem. Now, you know, we saw that the euro has been continuing to fall. As a matter of fact, after the comments that we saw last week on regarding the continuation of unusual and all sorts of unlimited tools, that the euro did drop, the dollar did rise. But there still is a major move into markets, equity markets, outside of Europe, outside of Japan, outside of China, into the U.S. Now, the one caveat there is that Japan, even though Shinzo Abe, the leader there, has his lowest approval ratings on his economic plan that he's had, a lot of euphoria initially, then it dropped off. The yen also slid, making it much better for that country's market. As a matter of fact, there was one day last week that the Nikkei was up 4%. Pretty substantial for a major developed market to be up like that. Down about 2% the next day, then up 2%. A bit of a seesaw, again, on the news of Ebola, on the news of what's going on around the world, and some of the concerns with Europe. Now, Europe is definitely the central hotspot right now for much of the concern by investors and what's going to happen there. They're a major trading partner of ours, let's face it. But at the same time, I think that we need to take with a grain of salt what is being said by the ECB and Mario Draghi. There still is a major fight in a dispute that is going on between many of the countries there and Germany about bond buying and about the unconventional methods that will go on. And the question is, who is going to win? Germany is seeing a lot of and a great brunt of the problems due to the slowdown in the region, as well as the fact that there is a major amount of trading that has slowed down due to the sanctions on Russia. But at the end of the day, you know, what's going to happen is we're going to continue to find out whether or not investors believe Mario Draghi and the central bank is, you know, something they can do, and how long the investors will believe, and how long we will believe that the central bank can continue to flush liquidity in the markets. One of the interesting things that also was out last week, and if you think about it, we know that the central bank of the U.S., the Fed, is not going to be selling their bond portfolio anytime soon. We also know that they are looking next week. What's coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday is meetings and then a policy announcement talking about interest rates as well as their bond purchase program. And this is the meeting where they're supposed to shut down the bond purchase program from new purchases moving forward. Even if they don't have any new purchases, interest and maturing bonds will be rolled back into asset-backed securities, whether it's going to be treasuries but primarily mortgages. And if you think about the $4 trillion that they have outstanding, and if you think about the interest rate on average that they're getting and the maturing money that's coming in, they're still going to be purchasing somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 to $15 billion per month moving forward if they don't sell out anything in their portfolio and they let the portfolio naturally run off, considering the current interest rate environment that they're dealing with. So really, if you really break it all down, while they're ending the quantitative easing program from the new purchases, they're really not ending it for, I don't even know how long, if for the next 5 years, 10 years, if they're going to continue to roll the money into purchase of bonds. Now, at the same time, we're seeing that oil has been having a real hard time. Obviously, many of the natural resources and commodities such as gold and platinum and copper are having a really tough time when it comes to making any headway. Even with all the bad news, concern about the geopolitical issues and the Ebola outbreak, because the dollar continues to move higher. Now, I don't know how long that's going to play. We'll see what happens when the Fed meets and they do talk about what is bothering them and what they think is good right now and what steps they're going to make to bring down the dollar, because we're also seeing that many of the companies that have been reporting over the last 2 weeks have been talking about the currency headwinds. We saw that Coca-Cola got cracked pretty good, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that they had a major amount of currency headwinds, and they're projecting in the future about 7% off profits due to the fact that they're seeing some major breakdown in currencies and they're not hedging properly. Caterpillar, also a similar situation, although Caterpillar beat by a pretty wide range, but they were talking about how they have these currency headwinds. And that's some of the things that are going into the whole process of concern about, well, whether or not earnings are going to be met over the next quarter or so. So even though we saw this amazing recovery over the last week and week and a half on markets, the fact of the matter still is that these currency headwinds are a major question in terms of, you know, what's going to happen moving forward. Now, I wanted to get to a couple of different discussions before we get to our guest. We talked to Fausto Puglisi, I guess yesterday, day before, and we're going to bring that interview to you in a second. But one of the things that is very interesting and you see that is happening with the market on an intraday basis is any conversation about Ebola is really spooking things. You know, we saw that last week there was the doctor who came back in New York City. He was diagnosed about having the actual virus. And, you know, the quarantine discussion goes on and whether or not there's going to be a 21-day or a 10-day, and is it going to be a self-quarantine, a self-monitoring, you know, and all this? The big question is going to be whether or not any further outbreak occurs due to the fact that there is a particular time period, time frame, when in fact a patient that has Ebola is contagious. Now, right now we're being told that you're only contagious when you start your fever. Okay, that's fine. And it can only be transmitted through bodily fluids, you know, close proximity bodily fluids. Now, we did hear that this gentleman from New York was at a bowling alley. He was on the subway. He went to a place to eat, et cetera. He was obviously in his apartment, in and out a bit. But he was self-monitoring, and he didn't have a fever at any of the times that he was out doing these other things. He was only diagnosed after he found that he had a fever and some stomach problems, and he went right to the hospital, and he's under careful watch, some medication, rehydration, et cetera, taking the I believe it's the Shimerix drug for the for Ebola. And as of last, he was you know, kind of stable and in the process of the next phase of this horrible Ebola disease. But the markets don't take it very well. The markets are very concerned and very skittish. Anytime there's a news item about that, you see the break. As a matter of fact, on Thursday, you saw that as soon as any kind of information came out, futures came down very hard. Markets came down very hard. Overnight on Thursday, futures were down on the S&P close to 13 or 14 points and somehow managed through the idea that earnings were a bit better. And the housing number came out that beat, which we'll talk about in a second. The fact of the matter was that, you know, things recovered, and it was almost like there was a desire to prove that, hey, Ebola doesn't bother us. And we saw that the S&P got right up to its 50-day moving average, kept above its 200, broke above a bit of a minor resistance level there. And the Dow did very well. The NASDAQ did very well. Now, one of the things that I found really interesting was that we saw some of the economic numbers come out, and we did see that the new housing beat estimates. But the prior month and the two prior before that were revised lower. So when you look at the revision and you calculate the change from the revision to the current, it was actually a positive number, where they're looking at a negative possible number on a month-over-month basis. Now, follow me on this. So what they did was, again, they calculated, okay, we had a revision, and we calculate the current months on the revision, and it ended up being we were a bit ahead. Okay, that's good. But if you actually calculate what the current month was on the estimated number, you were far lower. You had much worse of a number than was estimated. The real way to calculate this, because nobody knows what the revision is going to be, is how much, according to the estimates, are we off? And the fact is, it was like 7.8% when it was supposed to be maybe a 3 or 4% decline in new housing sales. Now, the news showed it as a beat with revisions lower. It's a very tricky process that they go through. You have to look at that, and it's the same thing that what's going on with earnings. While companies are beating, what's happening is they're beating much lower revised numbers or much lower estimates that have come down over the last 3 months. Estimates have been coming down very, very quickly due to the fact of the dollar, due to the fact that there has been some conversations with companies by analysts, and they brought down the numbers, and miraculously, companies beat by a penny here or there. Some companies beat by a wide margin, and like we saw with Caterpillar. What I find the most fascinating right now about all of this in earnings season is there is all of a sudden a new conversation that's going on in the media, and it is talking about how many of these companies are beating and how they are beating due to the fact they're doing massive buybacks. Now, as we talked about many times in the past, buybacks are good for the company because they put basically an underlying bid under the stock to a degree. At the same time, what they also do is because they're retiring shares, the earnings per share is actually going to be higher because the division of earnings per share is now over a fewer amount of shares. Now, this has been going on a long time with IBM, just a record amount of numbers that they've been buying back. But all of a sudden, the news is getting wise to some of this and saying, hey, wait a minute, you know what? You have been not growing your revenues. You have not been doing anything significant. You have not been growing your earnings. The only way you've been really doing it is through buybacks. And how long can that last? Well, we have low interest rates, and they're buying, bond issuance and bringing money in and bringing money in, lets them do all of this great buybacks. But really, at the end of the day, what does that really say about the stocks? Are they actually earning more money, or is it just financial engineering? And this is finally, you know, I've been fetching about this for a long time. It's finally getting into the mainstream media where they're starting to question some of these companies. And that's why we saw IBM pretty much fall off a cliff. IBM's revenues were awful. Their earnings were terrible. They actually sold off a company last week in the chip area, but had to pay the other company close to, I think, $1.3 billion to take the company off their hands. Now, there was some deal made, and there was some requirements with this global foundries on the chip business that they would use them for a certain amount of years and all that. But obviously, this was a company or a component of IBM that was bleeding for a long time, and it leaves a lot of question when they all of a sudden have to pay to get rid of a part of their company. Must have been pretty bad. We talked about this on the DH Unplugged show in length, and I think that's something you should listen to. But this is what I've been talking about with IBM, a real problem with what they're doing, because the end game is either go private or you're going to face the fury of investors one day. When you stop buying back your stock as much, or when the earnings miss, big problem. Because baked into all the analysis right now is a lot of the share buybacks. And, you know, depending on when they buy it back and how much they buy back and the level of whether they're going to continue in the future with buybacks, it's going to be a big issue for markets. And it's going to be a big wake-up call when the realization is that a lot of the earnings growth has come from buybacks and share retirement. So look at that when you're looking at the overall growth of investment, growth of earnings, growth of revenue on a quarter-by-quarter basis over a number of years, and track that. Now, we've been showing you a lot of that on, for example, on the Stocktoberfest that we've been running on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Each and every day, we put up a couple different stocks, and we have a good amount that we put up there so far. You need to check that out because it shows you the year-over-year growth. It shows you the margins. It shows you return on equity. It shows you the charts. It shows you the analyst estimates. We have all that both written and in graphical format so you can see what's going on. But some of the analysis that we do and how we look at a stock in terms of understanding what's going on and whether or not it is a good candidate to include in a portfolio, if it's a clean number or not, all that's there. We do a rating and a ranking both on fundamentals and on technicals. These are the kind of things that you need to do. And you know, in order to make sure that you have a stock that is a high-quality stock. Now, what's interesting is that out of all the stocks that we look at, about 5,000, we have a pretty strict screen to include in our Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy portfolio. And the more that we have, the more that we can feel comfortable about equity exposure. So, for example, if out of 5,000 stocks, five make it through the screen, we can say, you know what, something's not right, and obviously companies not earning money and growing. There's a problem maybe with margins. Who knows what the reason is, but you could say, wait a minute, all of a sudden companies are not meeting the grade, and this is a bigger discussion about what's happening in the overall market in terms of stocks fundamentals. Now, right now, we have close to about maybe 65 to 70 that have come through. That's about average. That's about the normal amount of stocks that come through. But some of the names that are falling off due to the fact that they're not keeping pace with EPS growth, revenue growth, and margins. That's the big three right now that's throwing stocks out of the screen, the final screen. I think it's very interesting that we have some new inclusions in there, clearly. That always rotates around. But we're finding that some of the old players, the quality names that we've seen with big growth for some time, have really started to slow a bit. And whether that's due to the dollar, whether that's due to the current global economy just slowing down a bit, whatever the reason is, I find it very interesting of how the change is going. You know, taking out a bunch of the consumer discretionaries, some of the industrials coming out as well, some of the technology actually coming in, adding a bit more to it, and rotating the type of consumer discretionary that's in and out. That's one of the things that you want to look at. Like, what is the name? What are the names that are coming in? What are the names that are going out? We got a few more transportation companies in there. And that's interesting because, of course, you see the margin expansion and possible growth on lower cost of fuel. That makes sense. So this whole process that goes along, I think, is very interesting. And you've got to check it out over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Look at Stocktoberfest. Well, it's a good time to take a break. I want to talk about SodaStream after we get back and a couple other things to close the show. But let's get to a discussion about trading, intraday day trading with Fausto Puglisi. And our guest today is Fausto Puglisi. I haven't talked to Fausto in a long time, a good friend of mine for a very long time, an excellent trader, an excellent educator. He started the firm Cyber Trading University, and it's something that we're going to talk about today, change it up a little bit for some of the things we've been talking about. So, Fausto, how are you?
I've been doing good, Andrew. It's been a while.
I know, it has been a while. Listen, I wanted to talk to you about trading and kind of bring back some educational component about what trading is, maybe how it differs from, you know, obviously buy and hold and swing trading. You know, what is day trading and all that? And then I had a bunch of questions I want to ask you. You ready?
Yeah, shoot away.
Okay. So tell me and explain to all of us, you know, what your definition of day trading is.
Okay, well, first of all, most people on Wall Street are day trading. Day trading is in and out the same day. When you see the traders on the New York Stock Exchange, they're day trading. It's just that you're looking for, you don't really care what the company does. You're finding things that are moving the market, and we could talk a little bit about it specifically, you know, like the Ebola stocks, everything that has to do with Ebola. You know, there's a lot of stocks that react to it. Traders just find opportunities like these things that are moving the market, and traders just trying to just make a day's pay. And if it's, you know, an individual, if it's somebody just trading their own account, their own IRA, whatever it is, but you're just trading the first hour, the last half hour, and that's it. That's day trading.
So that's interesting.
No overnights.
No overnights. That's a big rule. I know that. No overnight tradings, no matter what. Do not hold overnight, no matter what the case is. But let me ask you, so you said the first hour, last hour. What happens in between?
Really, that's, you know, you got to look at it. That's where the market's actually kind of like things start to quiet down. You got to remember there's a lot of orders from the night before. There's a lot of pre-market trading, which is a lot about a lot of day trading happens at that time of the hour. But once the market opens up after about a half hour, hour tops, things start slowing down because all the orders are already in, are already out there. So, you know, everybody knows who's got their buyers, who's got their sellers. And that's actually a very good time if you're a swing trader to trade, because now swing traders need that technical analysis that they're using where they're holding positions for a couple of days or anything overnight so now they can start doing their analytical stuff.
So when so what I'm hearing from you is that the whole idea of day trading is that you're going to trade within a certain amount of hours, you know, morning time, afternoon time. But the main thing there, it seems like, is that you need activity, right?
You need volatility. That's exactly right. And that's where most of the volatility happens within that time frame.
So when you are, you know, starting your day, what is it? How do you pick a stock to trade? I mean, how do you find what you're going to do and what are you targeting?
That's an excellent question, Andrew. A lot of people ask that. And the way we go about doing it is this. I mean, you know me. I run a professional trading room. I got hundreds of traders all over the world that log in. I start around 8 a.m. in the morning Eastern time. And things usually start picking up around 8:30, 1 hour prior before the market opens up. So what we do is we watch a lot of the pre-market trading with high-frequency trades, which is one of the big things that I teach. You get to see all that pre-market, what's happening at those times. So what's happening, you're going off your top 20 list, the big percentage gainers and losers. So you start seeing these things start making the list. And not only that, but they're also coming from the day before. Maybe a company came out with earnings, you know, Cree was one of them actually, you know, that got beat up yesterday. And what happens will trickle down, you know, in the after hours and then going into the morning hours. So what happens, people, they're talking about on CBC, they're talking about on TV, they're talking about Bloomberg, whatever it is. People are watching it. People live, sleep, trading all day long, and they don't know what to do. So, but depending on what kind of brokerage firm account you have, you know, a lot of people can't get that access of that time. And by the time their orders are going in, we're already selling to them.
Right. So you work in the early hours, and you're figuring out, okay, all the action is an imbalance of orders that come in because maybe of earnings, maybe come news, maybe something like that. And you're basically looking to take a piece, scalping it, right? I mean, taking a piece of the move that is either exaggerated in one way. I mean, is that what you're doing? You're finding those things that are outside you, the gains, the losses, and looking for a turning point? I mean, what goes into it after you identify the stock and after you figure out where your entry is?
Well, what we do is, and obviously we look what's called for the high-frequency trades. One of the things, the words that we use that we kind of invented here is called an iceberg order. So we look for these things that are called iceberg orders, and with those iceberg orders, that's where you see like 100 shares, 300 shares, 500 share buyers, and then bam, you have like a 75,000 share buyer. You know, and you got to remember, Andrew, and all the listeners out there, when you look at a chart, because I think that's the first thing people read and they start to learn in charts, they don't realize that the chart gets its data from buyers buying and selling. And those major support and resistance levels that you see on a chart, the heads and shoulders, the teacups and the handles, whatever you want to call them, those are the iceberg orders that are
right,
out there.
Right.
And that's what we look for. So when we have a game plan, we wait for a stock to come to us, and we'll just put our orders right above or below those big iceberg orders.
So that's interesting because there's always those levels of support that are pretty well known in terms of looking at whether it's trend lines, looking at moving averages and things of that nature. So let me kind of, I'm going to read through what you just said. So let's say that you know, you see that a stock or an index is coming up on a particular, you know, moving average, and you're going to put the orders right below that or above that, depending on the directional movement of the situation. You may say, take a short, take a long. And then what's going to happen is you're going to wait because you realize, hey, the masses are moving in that direction. And when it does break, it's going to move. And if it does, in fact, confirm and then break, well, you take the position and then, you know, somehow figure out where you're going to get out. Is that a summation?
That's it. Okay. It's as simple as that. You know, like, I'll give you an example. Like, I know the people are going to be listening to this in the future. And like one stock, I'll give you an example. I had a great trade today, a stock symbol INFN. And here was a stock that was up about 30% today. And then what happened at that point, there was a 275,000 share seller out there at a price of $13. If you go on YouTube, you could actually watch it. I actually taped it for one of our free webinars that I did. And then, sure enough, when you see a big seller out there, you would think, like, wow, that's a big resistance levels. But what happens there is somebody took the seller out, meaning someone executed, and you could see all the time in sales, and you see that number. People are just buying 10,000, 20,000, 5,000, and then sure enough, the stock ran another buck, you know, another dollar.
Right.
So these are things that, you know, once again, when you look at it, people are like, well, what's 50 cents, a dollar, Andrew? You know what? On 1,000 shares, on an investment like that, if you could do $1,000 a day, you're talking about $250,000 a year job. You know,
well, no, a $250,000 part-time job, because it seems like you just told me you only work in the morning and the afternoon.
Exactly. and you know what? It's funny you say that, but people are now starting to realize that. They're like, I don't get it. So now they're starting to realize what these brokerage firms, these market makers, these hedge funds guys do all day long. They borrow you money, and they go out there and they trade it and they use it. So what do you need? You know, you could do it yourself just by playing some of these stocks.
And this is obviously one of the reasons that there's such excess volatility in the beginning of the end of the day is also not only because of all the orders, also the day traders. If they're
exactly.
If they're involved in the markets in the first couple hours and the last couple hours, then you know that, hey, you know what? They're either winding up or winding down positions either side of that. And that obviously is one of the answers why there is so much volatility throughout the day. There's something that you call a trap. Now, it's a little bit difficult, I know, to probably explain. And like you do, one of the things that's great that I love that what you do is you do trading webinars and training live when the markets are open, right for your students. And you kind of look at the level two and the you identify the different things that are, whether it's going to be, you know, where you want to put a order in or whether you want to trade it and take your profit. But one of the things that you identify is something called a trap. Can you kind of go through some of that with us?
Yeah, well, basically, you know, one of the things that you got to remember, before I answer that question, let me just get back to what you're talking about the liquidity and how much volume is happening from these traders, because we make up almost 70% of the volume. And the reason for it, you got to understand that there's a winner and there's a loser, Andrew, and everybody has to realize, you know, this is not a casino. We're not playing against the house. We're not trying to beat Steve Wynn. So it's between you and it's between me, you, and someone else. There's a winner and a loser, and the exchange is what they want, and that's why they gave all this transparency and all this technology to the general public, because they were limited just to market makers and brokerage firms out there to do all these trades, and everything was, they were kind of holding them held hostage if they wanted to trade it or not, and it also the company. So that's when I came in 20 years ago, they wanted the general public to do it because at the end of the day, what does it do for the exchanges? Gives them more volatility, lets people do more trades, and they make more money because that's what they're in the business for. Mm-hmm. You guys want to go out there and kill yourself and you want to do 20 billion shares, whatever it is. You know what? It's just more money for them. Now, to get to your question about the traps, well, you got to remember, I was trained, I live here in New York, I was trained by the best traders in the world. So I've learned over the years, and they trained me ways of doing things that are called reverse psychology. Now, everyone probably knows what I'm talking about. When they buy a stock, as soon as they buy it, the thing, you know, it goes down. As soon as they sell it, it goes up. Well, there's a way of a reverse psychology how they'll play both sides and they'll, you know, you'll get an illusion, look a little different on a chart than what you're not used to. And it's just to know how to play the game. And that's what trading is, Andrew. It's just it's a game that 90% of the people just were never taught how to play it. but it's not hard. The hardest thing to teach is just the experience and the discipline. That's it.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned that because I know a lot of people are probably out there laughing, going, yeah, man, I bought that stock. And when I sold it, it just went right back up. You know, the thing is that not only do we have traders that are doing this, but there's algorithmic machines, if you will, and computers that are looking for levels that are the pain levels on the up and the down. You know, if you're short, where's the pain level to get out? And then it shoots up after that. And where's the downside level where there's going to be some pain? And find out where there's a lot of stops and seeing where there's maybe potential stops and blow those stops, of course. And that's kind of the sweet spot for you, right?
That's all it is. That's all it is. And remember, I always tell everyone, we're just the ants, Andrew, trying to get the crumbs on the floor. We're not moving these big blocks. So everyone's always concerned and nervous about dark pools and all concerned about high-frequency trade. They're all concerned about, you know, well, I got to compete against algorithms, like you mentioned. And they keep forgetting there's 25,000 shares traded, you know, on the markets. Why does everybody trade always the top 10, the most volatile ones? And when you trade with those, you're competing against the best traders. You're competing against the most expensive stocks. You're competing with the algos. It's not worth it. You know, like I told you, there's so many stocks out there that people would say, like for example, I'm not trying to promote any stocks, but I did a trade yesterday in a stock, and you can look it up, RGLS. It was in the pre-market. Mm-hmm. It was up 250%. People are like,
That's it?
Impossible.
That's it? No, that was obviously a new drug find. Yeah. That. Yeah.
Yeah. So people are like, nah, that's impossible. Go look at it. Look in the pre-market. It went from $8 to $18 in an hour, you know. But you wouldn't see Apple do that. You wouldn't see, you know, Chipotle do that. You wouldn't see GM do that. But and then next question, people are like, well, why did it go up? I don't know, and I don't care. Well, I know it was a big buyer's buying it. I made my day's pay, and where it is today, this is irrelevant. I'm on the next one.
So how many stocks would you actually trade at a time?
Well, you know, what I would do and how I teach people is different. I teach people, listen, if you can't make money with one, there's no way you're going to make money trading two, you know?
Yeah.
So you basically, what I do, you know, I could trade three, four, five stocks at a time, but you know what? It's all about everyone just starting out on training wheels and practicing with one stock. If that one's not going your way, you sell it and you just go to another one. That's why we run a professional trading room. You know, I've been doing it for, you know, remember when I started, I used to work in an on-site facility with 200 traders doing exactly what I'm doing. And now we do it online. And the whole idea is when you work with a team, you know, at least everyone, you got more eyes looking at one stock. And, you know, there's so much volume going on that, you know, you really can't make a difference to the stock's movement. Mm-hmm. When you trade stocks that are doing 10, 20, 50 million shares, because most of us only trade a couple of hundred shares, you know,
right,
trying to make a day's pay.
So what won't you trade? What are some of the kinds of stocks that you won't trade, that you don't recommend trading, and that you don't teach about trading?
Oh, my God. It's like endless. I mean, I would never, like, I mean, you see the market, even though being up, the market has been pretty volatile today, being up 200 and almost 300 points today, came back down. We were down, we were at like 1580, we're up to like 1680. I mean, brand name stocks like Facebook, Microsoft, the ETFs, mm-hmm. You know, things like that are really just not worth it for people to go out there when you're competing against the best traders out there. I mean, there are stocks like I just mentioned, and I was watching on the financial stations not too long ago. People, well, now all of a sudden they're talking about the Ebola stocks, you know?
Right.
And it's like, I was trading the Ebola stocks on October 1st. If you go on my Twitter feed, I had no clue, Andrew, that these stocks had anything to do with Ebola, you know? That Lake had was building, you know, and it's funny, people are like, well, what do they do? Well, Lake makes the suits, right? APT makes the suits, and there was another one, IB. I've got the symbol at the top of my head.
iBios, which had the relationship with the company
that
makes the ZMAP, which the company, yeah, they were up like 100% one day and 75%, then they dropped 40%, and yeah, it's crazy. No, I agree. It's kind of funny, though, and refreshing in a way, that you're looking, I mean, let's just boil it down to, you're looking at price action. That's it. I mean, you really don't care what, not only do you not care what the symbol is, but it, you know, the symbol could change every day, and you're just looking at price action, which is purely technicals, obviously, and at a much finer level, much more refined level.
But I still trade, Andrew. I do trade brand name stocks. I mean, you and I, we all have IRAs and, you know, pensions. I mean, you know, I one of my favorite stocks from last year to this year, you know, is Microsoft. It did well on it, you know. Some of the airlines took a big hit. I bought some of them, but I'm looking for the next, you know, 5 years, and if I could double my money, I'm going to make more money putting in that and putting it some bank, making 1% interest. But I'll go out there and short those stocks as a day trade. It's a different animal. See, that's where people get themselves in trouble, Andrew. And that's where back in 2000, which you remember, we go way back.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I know you, since like 96, 97,
something like
I think.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, back then, people were not day trading. They were mixing and matching, and they were getting their emotions involved, and they were trading. They were trading brand name stocks, you know, NASDAQ 100 stocks, Dow stocks, and they don't realize you're dealing against the best traders, and you can't. Those stocks are more geared towards, you know, the only time you could actively trade those stocks is the market's very volatile. But they don't move every day, you know? And us traders, we're looking to just make a day's pay, and we're doing it and because it's like a job. You know, you got to remember, if you're a contractor, okay, and, you know, you're not looking to buy a house to live in it. You're buying it to make your day's pay to work. So if it's in a bad neighborhood or a great neighborhood, at the end of the day, you just it's a job. And that's what people are not treating trading. They don't realize that, number one, you have to make an investment. You know, Andrew, you know, listen, first thing I tell people, do not ever, ever, ever tell me anything's for free. I don't want to buy anything that's free because the only thing that's free is the cheese in a mousetrap.
Yep.
Nobody makes money on free stuff. If it costs me a dollar, I'd rather pay a dollar than get it for free. You got, a lot of people don't want to pay, you know, don't realize that you can get this data. You can see 70% of the volume. It was, of course, $15 a month to get total view.
Mm-hmm.
But people, you know, it's like, and you remember back in the day, I used to pay $2,000 a month for that.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole different animal back then. I mean, it's still kind of expensive for if you get all of the data. But just to get a few pieces, just the NASDAQs or whatever, it's, you know, in the level two level, which you see all, of course, the not only the trades that are going off in the bid ask, but you see the trades underneath it and where they are in terms of the various brokers, et cetera. What I assume is the best environment to trade is more of a volatile environment than just a smooth little, you know, movement here, movement there. Obviously, in any environment, there could be a stock or stocks that have extreme volatility, which is what you want. You want that range, right?
Yeah, you want that range, but just please keep in mind, because I want to scare everybody thinking like, because first thing they think off the top of head and say, oh, Fausto must be playing penny stocks and bull toy. I don't touch any of those things. That's the wild, wild west. You can't see any high-frequency trades. You can't see any of that. What, you know, every stock that I trade is on the NASDAQ National. It's on the Dow. You know, these are just companies that, remember, there's everyone just only knows the top 100 stocks in the world. There's another world out there that will give you less risk with more reward. You just need somebody like me, a mentor, or somebody to train you. And that's why I kind of tell everyone, like, I just came back from Toronto. I did a big speaking up there. I don't know if you saw me. I also did a big speaking on the New York Stock Exchange. Actually, I rang the closing bell. I don't know if you saw that with Steve Forbes.
No, you didn't. Oh, he's a fun guy, isn't he? He's an interesting fellow.
You know what's amazing? He wrote a big article about day trading, and I was talking to him for about a while, and he remembers it clearly. And I'll send you the photo. You can see it on my Twitter feed.
Uh-huh.
I was actually in the back ringing the closing bell. I didn't notice when I was talking to him, but he says, you know, this is actually my first time, too, ringing the closing bell. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Really?
Forbes. He's like, yeah. You would think it, right?
Yeah. No, I spent some time talking to him and all that. One time, he's a strange dude.
Yeah.
He's kind of a strange dude. Well, anyway, let me just kind of a couple of things. How is it that, you know, what do you do to, like, cut losses or maybe even take gains? How do you know where that range is? You got a stock you mentioned earlier that it was up, you know, 100-something% or whatever. That's a wide range. I mean, where do you know where to cut the position and, or add to it or, you know, go back into it, et cetera?
That's a great question, Andrew. And what I tell people is this. Just great traders never buy at the bottom and sell top. We always buy in between. So a lot of my students that I've trained in my trading room, some of them, I mean, only maxed out, only made $2 on that trade. The worst one probably made 50 cents because that was their day's pay, you know. 50 cents on 1,000 shares is $500. It's $100,000 a year. Once again, like you said, part-time job. So, I mean, traders don't. I train my students not to get greedy. You know, just take what you made because I think it's still come right back down. Because a lot of people ask me, they say, "Oh yeah, I looked at that stock. Now it's back to $8." I'm like, "Yeah, but that's not when I had it. I'm out of it." So traders, what we look at, we just want to run it and make what we wanted to make. We want to run with that wave. Think of it like a tide, like going surfing. You know, you see the waves coming. You see the wave. Eventually, you're going to take one. You're not going to take the biggest. You're not going to take the smallest. You might not get it when it starts. You might not end it to finish. You just want to get it right in between, and that's all you're looking to do, and you're happy, and it's game over.
Interesting. Well, I appreciate the effort here today. I know that you have some classes that people can attend over at cybertradinguniversity.com. Any other places they can look?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of places. First of all, Andrew, I don't know if you, I think you even you also endorsed it. I came out my new book.
Yep.
Wiley wrote, was actually harassed me for a long time. It's the first day trading book that hasn't been out in 20 years.
Really?
The last one out, well, the last one was out with the Soz Bandits with Harvey Halkin, if you probably remember.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first day trading book that's been out. It's a great little book that's going to basically give you a outline of the game, how to play it, gives you a little bio about me. And if you do buy it through and mention Andrew's name, you'll also get 2 weeks in our live trading room for about 100 hours of training. So you get to see what it's like to be in a professional trading room. Just tell us that you heard us on this podcast.
Oh.
And
I didn't know that was even. I didn't even know there's a deal going on. That's awesome.
Why not? Yeah. I mean, listen, you got great fans, and you know what? They all want to see what it's like, and you know what? There's not too many people, which you know, Andrew. I'm a 12-time champion at the Challenge. There's not too many people that trade live with you and show it to you.
I know. I saw it, and when I first entered the trading room and his training and all that, and I'm like, wait a minute. This guy is like teaching and trading live at the same time, thinking the whole time I'm so nervous. Oh, man, he's going to lose all this money, you know, at the time. Like, oh, what's going on? I mean, and, you know, there's times you don't do so well, but you trade small. You trade small, obviously, when you do that. But
yeah, it's kind of difficult a little bit. But, you know what, you make the best of it. And I've been doing it for so long. But I love it. I really have a passion to do it. I love seeing people making money at it. Because you know what? It's us against somebody else out there that has no clue what they're doing. So the whole point is, as long as you know how to play the game, you'll beat them every time.
That's awesome. Well, Fausto Puglisi from Cyber Trading University, thank you for joining us. And we'll have all the information on how to get his book and check out some of the educational classes that he has and the various webinars and all the good things that are out there for training over on the show notes for this episode of The Disciplined Investor. Fausto, thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks for having me again, Andrew.
Well, again, just a way to understand different market trading techniques is always important, I think, and to have that tool in your bag of how to actually trade on a very fast-moving position that maybe you can scalp. And I want to talk to you, as I mentioned before, about SodaStream. Now, on Friday, during, I guess it was about the 11 o'clock hour, 10:30, 11 o'clock hour or so, there was a very big spike on SodaStream on a lot of volume. So you had not only a move all of a sudden of about 4 or 5% on SodaStream, but also came on big volume. No news was out at the time, but all of a sudden it moved. And you got to stop and say, wait a minute, okay, what's going on there? Now, how do you know this? Well, one of the things you have is you have maybe some of these stocks on a watch list. You have a screener that maybe will give you alerts on actually, you know, stocks that are moving on a quick basis with, extreme amount of volumes, let's say 100,000 shares or more or something of that nature. Now, you could do this in some of the various trading platforms. We use TradeStation to give us those alerts. Also, you can go to something like a briefing.com. They'll give you those kind of alerts when they happen. They'll pop up on the screen. Well, we did see that there was this big pop, and at the same time, took a quick look at the chart and saw there was a big hole in there. There's a big range that possibly it could move if there was some news that came out. This is a stock that was consolidating along a pretty good base, along a very defined support level, and started moving higher. And once it broke above its support level, there was really nothing to stop it from moving much more. Well, what we did was we took a very small position in that for our trading portfolio at the Disciplined Investor Growth strategy. And it turned out that SodaStream was beginning to do some testing with Pepsi on some of their products. Well, the stock went from, at that point, about up 5% to about up 20%, and then trailed back ever so slightly right along its level that there was resistance. So we cut the position, made about 12% on it in about, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. Now, my point is this ties in very well to what Fausto was talking about, but also I wanted to bring this to you because those kind of opportunities to take a position and to have a defined level that you're going to move in and move out, both if it went the other way on you, the wrong way, and you lost money, or if it went in your favor, maybe to either put on a trailing stop or to put a defined level where you said, you know, if it breaks below this, you know, you're out of it. It was very profitable, but the bigger question was, how do you get there? How do you find these? What is the way that you can, you know, be involved with the situation? Now, obviously, if you're not in front of a computer and you're not doing any kind of research during the day, it's very difficult. There's no question about that. But if you have the opportunity to have a system that will either give you alerts via email, via on-screen pop if you're in front of your computer, or a service that will feed you this kind of information on a regular basis, that's something that can be very profitable. Again, I mentioned briefing.com is one of the ones that we use. We have all sorts of different systems, but this Squawk Box, Rand Squawk, that has that kind of information as well. And even if you didn't see the move on volume, what you could have got was the alert from one of these services that, hey, something's going on with this company. Now, SodaStream has a pretty high short interest, so that also added to the benefit of adding a long position. It also had a, if you look at a daily chart, you'll see that there was a range that it was playing within, and once it got outside there, again, there was nothing there, and shorts would start to cover because the stock was moving up pretty well, and short squeezes are one of the ways that you can make a lot of money very quickly. So whether or not this plays out further in the next week or so, there will be volatility with this stock. There will be a lot of people coming out with commentary on this stock, and this is one of those things that you could possibly play intraday. Now, whether or not you get the same kind of move, that 20% move from the bottom that you saw on Friday in a matter of an hour and a half, is a totally another question, you know, totally another item. But you know what? If you want to find these and you're looking to get involved in these, you have to have some kind of a tool, some kind of a platform, whether it's, you know, TradeStation or briefing.com or even some kind of other alert system where you just put it, you know, an alert on. The problem, though, is if you're not looking at SodaStream and you're not, you know, actively monitoring that particular stock, how would you have found it? Again, it's the same thing. These screens that will give you a big volume move over the last 1 minute, big move on price, percentage change on the last minute, up or down, that will give you a constant view of where these things are moving, and then to find the news on it from some source to back it up and confirm what's going on, and then finally to have charts that give you a very good range, I think is something very important to look at. One of the things that we do, by the way, is every other Tuesday, we have a webinar, free webinar, and I'll probably talk about this on the upcoming Tuesday over at TradeStation, and just look up TradeStation Stocks and ETF Update, and you can register. It's at 11 in the morning. Every other Tuesday, we come on and we have a webinar that's free right on your screen. You can follow along with what we're doing and what we're talking about and some of the ideas. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the oil stocks that were ready to seemingly move, and there was a potential that if oil did any kind of recovery, that we're going to see a big move on some of these. We mentioned a few different names, and they have moved pretty well since then. Obviously, we had earnings from Halliburton, Schlumberger, some of the oil services companies that have done very well. But these are the kind of things that you want to take a look at. And we also talked about the airlines, mentioned Alaska Airlines. That's up about, since that day, about 18% or so. Just to back up a second, Alaska Airlines actually came out of our screen after their earnings because their earnings growth was a negative year over year. And while that was still a good thing compared to where we thought airlines would be, that just all of a sudden doesn't make the screen. So now back to the whole idea of quantitative, fundamental, and technical. So you'd quantitatively find and screen for stocks meeting certain criteria, look under the hood, you look at the fundamentals, understand what's happening on a ongoing basis and a consecutive quarterly basis, as well as look back over the last number of years, how the company is doing. Look at all the different components, ROE, ROA, ROI, all the different things that you could find within the stock, not just the EPS, not just the PEG ratio, and then make some decisions on quality stocks that you can hold, buy them on the technicals when they break out or base out, and then you could find good opportunities. Alaska Airlines was basing very much so and down very hard after the initial Ebola news came out way back, and that really took all of the airlines down. But one of the things was it had great fundamentals, and it was primarily a domestic carrier, right? Not a multinational, not a multi-continent carrier, and that was something that was very worthwhile. Same thing with, you know, you could look at the different airlines like a JetBlue, you know, and obviously UAL and American Airlines, all those did very well also on the upside after some of this, you know, fear kind of, you know, set back a little bit, and the fact that oil prices kept coming down, which is very good for them. So lots going on. You know, watch this week for earnings, of course, Tuesday, Wednesday for the Fed from the U.S. to come out with their statement. But I think the reaction to the ECB situation on Monday and Tuesday is going to be very interesting to watch, as well as any of the after effects from Ebola. We also picked up a small option, a put on the S&P, SPY, an at-the-money option put just for a little protection on portfolios. But again, we'll see how this plays out. Right now, it didn't seem to matter, any of the news over this week, but that could have been just a simple recovery where we're getting towards resistance again. We'll see how that plays. Not going to hold it very long if it moves against us, but again, a little bit of a hedge against the portfolio, something you should be thinking about as we saw the volatility rise and fall so dramatically over the last week or so. Join me for DH Unplugged every Tuesday, Wednesday. You'll hear it Tuesday night late, Wednesday morning it goes out. You can get that at iTunes. And any questions that you have, send it to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Have a great Halloween. Have a great trick-or-treat. We hopefully this week will be more treat than trick. And I'll see you then. See you next week. Thanks so much for joining me. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.